Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Over the weekend, I was reading the paper. Actually, it was online on the Afro where I saw the story break that two members of the high school football team from Steubenville, Ohio, were found guilty of Sunday of raping the 16-year-old girl in that case. These two young men were both convicted, Trent Mays and Malik Richmond. They are facing detention in juvenile jail until they turn 21. I looked at this and immediately started thinking a lot about what this meant. I started thinking a great deal about what it means about how we raise our young men in this society. I was thinking about issues around how the last 40, 50 years in America, the women's movement and women's rights have changed in this society. Equality has become something that still has to be fought for, but is more the norm in terms of what women can accomplish in America and of men and women's equality. It's even more in the home than it used to be. However, having said that, it seems when there's great social political change, whether it's this or whether it is the end of slavery in the 1860s, that it takes human consciousness a long time to catch up to the social and political change that people fight for. And is there something about men? Is there something about the way we raise boys? Is there something about male consciousness when it comes to women that fuels rape, that pushes rape? Is there a way that men can prevent rape and not just say it's a woman's job to prevent rape, which many people are trying to say, or blaming this young girl because she had too much to drink? It was her fault that she was sexually molested that evening. Is it something that we as men need to wrestle with in this society and to change the way we raise our boys, but also our own attitudes toward women? As I said to one of my guests leaving the show, I said, no, all men are not rapists. However, when most men get together alone, their attitudes, what we joke and say about women, perpetuate an idea about women as sexual objects, women as people we can manipulate in certain ways. And so I think that maybe it's time for us to wrestle with this a little bit, and that's how we want to kind of approach this tonight and even talk about what should happen to teenagers like these young men. Should they serve time in jail? Someone said to me this morning, putting them in a juvenile facility with hardcore young criminals, are they going to really wrestle with and change who they are? How does that happen? So, and not to say that people shouldn't pay for what they do and have to answer to the crimes that they commit. But we are joined here in the studio by Rashad Banks. Rashad Banks is a health educator at Planned Parenthood, works in our area middle schools. Gail Reed joins us by phone. She's director of advocacy for Turnaround, Inc. And Neil Irvin joins us, executive director of Men Can Stop Rape. And Rashad Banks, Gail Reed, Neil Irvin, welcome. Good to have the three of you with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much, Mark.
And we look forward to all of you joining us out there at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages and throw your comments there. I'll take a look at those in a few minutes. 410-319-8888. Neil, let me just begin with you, since I'm starting with you because you're the first guest we thought of this morning, and I'm glad you could join us.
Well, great. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate David Miller for introducing us.
Oh, yeah, I do as well. Great work that David's doing.
He does amazing work. And so the introduction I gave, I mean, what is your sense of before we talk about Steubenville directly, the sense of this whole issue about men?
Well, I think it's, you know, a part of what, Mark, I appreciate what you said, is that, you know, it's a really complicated issue when you start thinking about how do we teach boys to become men. And I think everything, and we like to say in our work that, you know, when you talk about misogyny and patriarchy and sexism, you know, those are real things, but they become really theoretical. A lot of what it is for us is about, as you were talking about, something about the way we teach our boys to see themselves and to be men that really creates attitudes, assumptions, beliefs, and behaviors that violence against girls and women is acceptable and almost becomes rites of passages for how boys, in a stereotypical way, prove themselves as men. And so I don't think, again, that any child is born with misogyny and sexism ingrained in them. These are things that we as a culture treat prepare them with, socialize them with, and now they find themselves out in our community, in relationships with one another. And so I think it is really evident when you talk about any kind of violence that a lot of that are learned behaviors, and we've got to do a better job as adults at unlearning that behavior and creating healthier, safer environments for all of our young people.
Gail?
Yes.
Your thoughts as well, just and as an opening.
Well, I would certainly agree. I think that this whole situation in Steubenville has been really captured everyone's attention because I think it really does highlight this culture and the cultural messages that we give our youth, both our boys and our girls. And I certainly think that the movement to really create a different culture for boys is a very critical one.
Rashad?
Yes. I agree with what they both said. I think, you know, as an educator who goes into a lot of the middle schools and tries to educate the young boys on, you know, consent and boundaries and topics like that, we try to get them to understand, you know, the whole basis of what consent is and, you know, the whole notion of just because someone doesn't say no doesn't mean someone's saying yes. And the many schools that I've gone into, you know, a lot of the boys sometimes have a hard time to understand the whole, you know, notion of you have to ask for something or someone has to give permission or something. You can't just take something. And that's one of the things that we try to educate the males on by doing different activities and talking with them. But there definitely is a struggle that they have sometimes of understanding that.
So, I mean, let me just talk about what happens culturally here. I mean, one of the things, I've been looking at the press, and someone posted this on Facebook as well. I mean, CNN kind of emphasized in some of their broadcast that these two boys were promising students. ABC News wrote a lot about the tragedy that these two young men can face additional charges. And the woman was drunk. The young girl was drunk. And NBC had a whole piece about lamenting the boys' promising football careers. USA Today, when I was reading that today, they spent a lot of time stressing that the young woman was drunk. So, and so this, I mean, this to me in some ways kind of goes to the heart of how we even view what's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, Mark, that's exact. I mean, look, this is where at the classic victim blaming, right? And so we've got a whole society of adults who are themselves entrenched in a culture. See, that's where misogyny and sexism and men's violence against girls and women, that's the conditioning of it. That even that all of us, adults, men and women, feed into talking about, oh, these poor boys who were led astray, versus here's another example of violence perpetrated against a girl. Here's another rape that's happened at the expense of a girl. And we as a society continue to look the other way when it comes to how do we understand how to protect and support girls and women from being safe against men's violence. Because we're so focused on the football and we're so focused on they're going to be incarcerated till they're 21. Now, I'm really challenged because much of our work is about engaging boys and men around this issue and recognizing that they are being set up for this type of behavior. But it can never be at the exclusion, I didn't hear that in what you were saying either, but never be at the exclusion of supporting survivors who come forward, who are brave enough to come forward with the victim blaming we know society puts on them. And this is where we have to do such a better job at looking at it differently. It wasn't. It's not that a girl was raped. It's always about a man or a boy raped a girl. And how can we talk about that as, you know, we're putting kind of the horse before the cart kind of way, and the way we think about it, but it's so ingrained in our society that people have a very difficult time talking about it in another way.
That's true.
Well,
now,
I think this situation goes beyond consent, and you know, I think that's certainly an element. But you know, if you've watched any of these videos or read any of these blogs, I think that the level of humiliation and aggression and degradation is really quite shocking. And I think that, Mark, you mentioned in the beginning these boys would somehow be in a juvenile facility with a bunch of hardened criminals. They're probably going to be in a facility with boys who've stolen cars and things like that. And this is pretty, you know, it's a pretty violent act here that these young men committed. So I think that, you know, it's important to talk about sex and what is consensual sex and so on. But you had, you know, boys talking about you know, paying somebody $3 to urinate on this girl. You know, it's pretty
vile.
Really, at a level that's, I think, really pretty shocking.
Which I do about to say something. I do want to come back to what you just said, because I think that to wrestle with what happens to young men like this is really important, and I think that what you just raised, Gail, is very critical and kind of, and I maybe because the way I laid it out in the very beginning of the program should have been challenged. I'm glad you did, so I'm going to come back to that challenge.
Oh, no, I was going to make a comment. What Neil was saying earlier about the victim blaming is, you know, when he was talking about whether we're talking about sexual assault, or even kind of if you look at domestic violence, we always kind of do the whole victim blaming. You know, if you meet someone, let's say a woman, a young lady who was maybe in a domestic violence relationship, one of the very first questions that's asked is, oh, why did she stay with the person? Why does, you know, she continue to stay? And the question needs to be is not why does she stay, is why does he choose to hit? So instead of always putting the blame on the person or the victim, we need to look at what is the perpetrator, what is the abuser, what is the person thinking that causes them to do these actions, and get to the root of that before we start looking at what the victim might have or could have done.
You know, I think we also have to look at what is our society doing to intervene and step in with these situations.
I guess the only one piece that I would want to add to Gail's comment is, unfortunately, you know, working with, and I know, working with young men for many, many years, I would tell you that I'm not shocked by the violence. This level of violence is a daily, as we speak, occurrence in boys' lives in urban, rural, and suburban communities across this country. It's a normalized way to express their notions of masculinity.
What is a normalized way of expressing it?
I mean, you know, the conversations of what to do to humiliate someone, to abuse someone, to take advantage. I mean, whether it be through, and I'm not one who says, oh, it's all about the media, but I know the evolution of media, whether it be the media, video games, sports culture, faith communities. There's a whole range of places where boys are receiving unhealthy messages about who they are supposed to be as men. And a lot of those messages center around forms of violence, so that when they are amongst one another, they attempt to compete with who can be more violent or more vile as a way to perpetrate or role model their type of masculinity. And if you've not had any kind of parental structure, if you have not had any kind of social emotional guidance, you are more vulnerable to society that gives you 24-hour access to images and ideas and attitudes that promote that type of violence. So unfortunately, I think Gail is right, it's an extreme level of violence and humiliation, but it is a really normal and really not very, for anyone who's working with boys, knows, not very unfamiliar.
So I'm going to come back to this point you just made, but let me go to the phones here. People want to get in this conversation. We're going to go to T and Derek, our first two callers, up and read something from one of our callers who hung up and wanted to leave a message. We'll get to his thought as well. 410-319-8888, and then go to Facebook. Tia in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was interested. Oh, I'm telling you about the story that happened on Sunday. I was shocked, and I made a comment about how our boys are not held accountable for their actions, and the fact that with them not being accountable, we teach the kids that they can, you know, that they can do what they want to do, you know, and then they don't understand the dangers of their actions and the consequences of their actions. We teach them to be, you know, through media of TV and videos or whatever, and these are the same influences in the 90s that the parents and the leaders of our society were speaking against. And we were talking about how this was going to perpetuate a violent society. Back in the 90s, we were making these points. But nobody wanted, I guess it was, we wanted to push the envelope of freedom of speech, you know, and freedom of expression. But these expressions are causing situations like these, because now our young boys are they feel like we, you know, that women are objects of sex. You know, I was just talking to a friend the other day, and we were saying, well, if I was to holler at you and you wouldn't speak, you know, my general conversation would be to curse you out. And I said, you know what, you're absolutely right, because that's what you get a lot of times. A woman comes walking down the street, innocent, mind her business. Because she looks vulnerable and you want to say something to her and she says no or reject it, then it's become, now I have to attack her in some kind of way, which is not, you know, I mean, that's not a civil society. That's not how civilized people should respond in a society, you know?
But in a patriarchal misogynist society, when the research on street harassment that shows that street harassment is not necessarily because that man thinks the woman's going to fall in love with him. Many times it's about a show of their masculinity, their show of their power, their entitlement to believe that women are there for their control. And the moment when the woman doesn't reciprocate their power, now their masculinity has been confronted. And so, as you said, they have to act out aggressively. And so that is not, as you say, an expression of what real manhood or masculinity is about. It's just an expression of a day-to-day example of how unhealthy masculinity, patriarchy, really does exist in our society. And it happened before there was a television set, before there was the internet, men's violence against girls and women existed. And that's something that we need to look at rather than trying to say, oh, it's video games or it's rap music. Patriarchy and misogyny existed for a long, long time, and we need to really, again, figure out ways to be honest about those kinds of conversations.
Well, it's hard to be Tia raised some really important points here, because I think you see that name-calling going all the time in the street. It happens all the time. You see guys driving down the street in cars yelling out at women, and it's just that's something that's not new. It happens where we work every day. Somebody saying, oh, you look cute, what's your name? Those kind of things are, you know, said to women who work in the building where we work, where our studios are. So that's not, it's like nothing, we hear it every day. Mm-hmm. And the men themselves don't think that is threatening.
Well, and our male privilege allows us to think that, right? We've been conditioned that we're just paying women a compliment. Not like your caller said, you know, seeing someone who may be vulnerable and taking advantage of that.
You were going to say something, Rashad?
Oh, no, I was just going to agree when you think someone mentioned earlier about when a group of males get together, you see maybe a male might see a woman walking down the street, and in his mind, he might be giving her a compliment, but it even kind of can get worse. When you have a group of guys together, you're going to they egg each other on and kind of want to outdo each other. So it can kind of even get more aggressive because they want to show that, you know, they're as tough as their counterparts or they're as tough as their peers. So, you know, they kind of perpetuate each other, kind of egg each other on in those situations.
And it takes a lot for another man or another person to intervene in that situation.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I was actually reading an article that one of my coworkers actually gave me earlier today, and I'm going to probably butcher the author's name. I think her name was like Zelma or Zellner Maxwell, and she wrote an article for Ebony Magazine.
And right.
The topic was, I think it was like the top five ways that men can, you know, help stop rape. And one of them was talking about not being a bystander. You know, if you see a situation, you know, if you're in a group of friends, you see a situation happening, to intervene and say something. And I think with certain in our male culture, it's very tough when you're a group of guys and someone wants to make a joke about someone or someone wants to make fun of someone. It's very hard, I think, sometimes to be that person to step out of it and try to stop it.
You're talking about Zerlina Maxwell.
Yes.
Who was raped, mm-hmm. as a political broadcaster,
mm-hmm.
got into a raging debate with Sean Hannity over this on Fox 45, appeared on Democracy Now! Just last week, I believe. And was talking about one of the things people keep pushing, the women should have to carry guns, women should do this to protect themselves. And her point is, you shouldn't be telling women what to do. You shouldn't be telling rape victims what they need to do. Mm-hmm. We should be saying to men, it's not acceptable,
exactly.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what her message was, a very powerful message, mm-hmm. that she was trying to give.
And I understand that she's been, since she made those comments, the target of just horrible backlash and blogging and
yes.
very, you know, just really, again, shocking. I still continue to be shocked, even though I see it every day. But, you know, again, the backlash for her, just her comments about saying what she did.
Let me get another call in here. And when we come back from the top of the hour, I'm going to jump right into the question of patriarchy and how deep and old it is. So what do you do about it? But first, let's go to the phones at 410-319-8888. Derek, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I disagree with the assessment of what I'm hearing so far.
Okay.
Society as a whole crushes you if you're convicted of rape. Okay? You're also ostracized in prison. It's my understanding in prison culture, you're not treated too well if you're a rapist. So it's not like society embraces these people. You have to get on the registry. Most men that I know that have daughters, it's unacceptable, any mistreatment. So maybe there's a subculture of men who treat women in this manner, but my life experience as an African-American male, today in the circles that I travel, it's not tolerated. And there's clear evidence society crushes this. You have a sex registry. And when you find out there's a rapist in your neighborhood, most people don't want it. So what I'm hearing is as if society gives these people a group hug. And don't forget that these two individuals who did this to this young lady were convicted. They were convicted. So I don't see society. It's disgusting. And I think most people in society feel that way. It's a disgusting act. And you should be, okay, if you put, that's something that should put you in jail for the rest of your life. But that's just my opinion.
No, no, Derek, I appreciate the call. I think it's an important contribution. Neil, let me let you grab this before we go to break.
Sure. I would just say to the gentleman, of course, you know, the belief is that, unfortunately, most rapists never spend a day in jail. So one of the reasons that activists are really encouraged by this case is that there was a relatively efficient use of the justice system in getting these convictions. But most rapists never spend a day in jail. The amount of rape, we're a primary prevention organization. I would send your callers to the Department of Justice and look at the statistics. One of the reasons we don't do statistics is people like to debate them back and forth. But an unbelievable, staggering amount of rape going on if you just go through the rape crisis centers around the country. And so as stigmatized as rape may be in our society, we still victim blame. We still make it so that many survivors can't come forward because she was drunk, she wasn't wearing the right thing. And in terms of talking about, you know, prisoners being, even prisoners having disliking rape, that just feeds into a whole range of stereotypes that go on about not only sexual assault in free society, but in incarcerated settings, and you know, prison justice for prison justice that rapists, you know, themselves deserve to be raped, and so there's just a whole lot that I think is that I would challenge in your last caller's comments. I do agree that people find it a disgusting act, but finding something a disgusting act and still not doing something to dismantle that type of violence is not good enough. It's not good enough to say, okay, I think rape is a bad thing and it's horrible and it's disgusting. I do not believe that rape is to put on the margins, because these young men felt brazen enough to put it on the Internet. And I would encourage you to recognize that before there was the Internet, this kind of violence was happening to women and girls, not only in the United States, but globally. So I just would challenge that last caller's perspective about how people respond to rape in this country.
We have to take a very brief break. We're going to come right back with our three guests. You just heard Neil Irvin, Executive Director of Men Can Stop Rape, Gail Reed, Director of Advocacy for Turnaround, Inc., and Rashad Banks, Health Educator at Planned Parenthood, who works with our middle school students. Mackenzie and Marvin, you're the next two callers up. We're going to come to your calls. We're going to read this email that came in, as well as a statement on Facebook. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this brief break to check on traffic. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. On our way back to our conversation, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. For the fifth year in a row, Maryland's public schools have been named number one in the country by Education Week magazine. Visit MarylandEducators.org to explore what it means to invest in our students, school construction and safety, and the educators' programs and services that make our schools a national leader. That's MarylandEducators.org. We are joined here by Rashad Banks, in studio, health educator at Planned Parenthood, works in area middle schools, Neil Irvin, who is executive director of Men Can Stop Rape, and Gail Reed, director of advocacy for Turnaround, Inc. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go for a quick call, and then we go back to our guest. Chris, you're on the air.
How you doing, sir?
Very well.
Sorry about that. I didn't know I was on.
You're on.
All right. Thank you, sir. What I wanted to say is when we're talking about problems as far as these young men and society in general, we have to look at the deeper root of the problem, which I believe is the absence of fatherhood. And what happens is when you have men, a woman can't teach a man how to be a man. And with us not being strong in the household, whether we're there or we're not there, you know, our men are actually raised by women. They're not taught to protect women. And then they're also raised by the imagery that they see on television and the media, which is why they would go ahead and idolize a rapper or, you know, someone in the entertainment industry who's actually out here just to go ahead and decrease our values in women. you know, this is what society has created. And then we sit back and we look at these two young men, and we're like, you know, we're trying to figure out why they're victimizing these women, but they don't have anybody to really, what can I say, to really tell them what's right and what's wrong, or really show them what's right and what's wrong, or nobody's really enforcing that.
Well, they had a coach. They had a really strong football coach who knew about it, and I think kind of seemed to participate in covering it up. So I'm not sure that the absence of a role model is necessarily the main issue.
Rashad?
I think it's got me, his comment was interesting because one of the things that he said was, you know, the caller said was, you know, you have women that are trying to teach men how to be men. And I think when we mentioned earlier about the kind of patriarchal society, I think that kind of goes into play here. Like, what does it mean to teach a man to be a man? Like, what does it mean to be a man? And I think
correct.
We have to look at then what are the different ideas and notions that we're instilling in our children from when we're young. What are we teaching them about gender stereotypes, about gender roles, gender norms? And I think it's not necessarily about teaching someone how to be a man. I think it's about educating the youth and educating people on what's right and what's wrong and educating people on, you know, what's acceptable and what's not acceptable.
Neil, you want to say something?
Well, I think that's right. I mean, you know, I agree with Gail. You know, there was an adult who happened to be male who was a coach who, in the beginning, the initial reports, and I'm not clear what his role was throughout, but there was belief that was attempting to cover it up. And so for me, I think we're not just talking about, you know, it being needing to be a man, but it needing to be the right man. I mean, Rashad said, I mean, I think, you know, the importance of knowing how to work with young people, how to role model and teach, and, you know, what is appropriate, what's a healthy emotional and social intelligence, how to do the right thing. These are not quaint, you know, antiquated ideas. You know, these are how you perform your role as a part of a community. And to teach a boy to be a healthy individual, male or female, my sister was a single mother. So I believe that there are women who can raise strong children. But I do believe that where we are now culturally is important for fathers and mothers to be in the lives of our children. My daughters need me in their lives as much as my son needs me in his life. And I think that's an important piece that adults need to be themselves aware of the messages and the role modeling that we may not be providing, because that football coach had an opportunity to be an example to those young men and failed. And so we want to not, you know, make it so that women are not in the position to raise talented, strong sons, because we know that they do it every day. But I think it's important that fathers, whether you be the biological parent or not, that men are indeed important in the lives of children and creating examples of what masculinity and humanity are supposed to be about.
A gentleman called in earlier and left this message on the phone. He said he didn't want to make the comment on the air. He said he thinks it's nonsense to say that all men are taught this as a rite of passage, thinks it's just a few bad apples, and he thinks women need to think about how to present themselves.
Well, I would just say, I just would say this, that on the side where he's right, oh, I would say he's more correct. Overwhelmingly, and again, don't look to me, look to the Department of Justice, look to the FBI, look to Office of Victim Services, there's a whole host of city and state and federal agencies that can support this data. Overwhelmingly, when sexual assault and domestic violence is perpetrated, overwhelmingly, it's men and boys who are perpetrating the violence. But what that statistic or research doesn't say and needs to, and what I want to highlight is, but the majority of us as men and boys will never perpetrate an act of sexual violence or domestic violence. But it's not good enough just to say, well, look, I'm not a part of the bad apples who are perpetrating the violence, when we know that there's so much violence that girls and women are experiencing. We as men have to do more every day in creating, as you talked about, Mark, in your building, every day, every moment, providing some kind of presence, some kind of attitude, awareness around how we make the environment safer for everyone. And so a few bad apples makes it so that these boys in Steubenville or the next rape case, unfortunately, that occurs, that it's, oh, those bad monsters over there. Most women are sexually assaulted by a man that they know they've had a relationship with for a year or more.
As this young girl was raped by men, that she, young boy, young friends that she knew. Gail, I mean, I think that this whole idea that women have to watch how they dress, what they say, what they look like. I mean, I think that's a very commonly held belief.
Well, I think that, again, that is part of this rape culture in which we live. And I think, unfortunately, girls as well as boys buy some of these messages. But, you know, you could look at what's happening in India. You know, and in India, they would say, well, women shouldn't ride on the bus. You know, if women don't want to get raped, they shouldn't ride on the bus. So I think that, you know, again, blaming the victim is hardly any kind of solution to this problem that everyone's trying to address.
Did you want to jump in here before we go back to the phones?
Well, one of the things when you made that comment, it made me think of a time when I was out of school teaching this actual lesson that we teach at Planned Parenthood. It's actually called our Consent and Boundaries lesson. And we talk all about, you know, what does consent look like and what sexual pressure. And I was teaching it for an all-male class for 10th grade boys. And I was giving certain situations about, you know, certain scenarios about sexual assault, and one of them was about a young lady at a party, and she was drinking and went up to a room with a young man. And a few of my students actually made the comment, well, if, you know, if it's her fault, because maybe, you know, she shouldn't have gone up to the room with him. She shouldn't have, you know, sat her drink down if he put something in her drink. She should have been more, you know, conscious, and she should have chose better decisions. And hearing those comments, you know, just really it made me think of, again, we're putting the blame on someone. It's not, they're saying, well, she should have done this, she should have done this. And I'm saying, you know, we have to look at why did this person decide to make these actions? And that's one of the things that we try to, in the classes that we teach, we try to get the guys to understand that, you know, it's not about what someone else does. It's about your actions that you do. It's about, you know, you decide to violate someone, you know, you decide to not listen or not to hear whether or not someone gives consent, you know. And we were talking about this topic with some of the students, and one of the students kept, you know, just talking about, you know, all about the woman's fault and, you know, her leading the guy on. And one of the comments I made to him, I said, well, even let's say if we're going to go with your notion, which maybe I'm not going to agree with, but why would you want to sleep with someone or have sex with someone who doesn't want to sleep with you? Like, to me, I don't understand why you would want to sleep with someone who is not wanting to sleep with you. And that just brought up a whole topic.
Or someone who's unconscious. Why would you?
Yeah, exactly.
Unconscious, yes.
I just wanted to share this. We'll go right back to the phones, go to McKenzie, and I'm going to raise some issues here and read another piece on the air. It was just announced, by the way, announced that two juvenile girls have been arrested and accused of making threats against the victim in the Steubenville rape case. Just happened. Steubenville Police Chief Bill McCafferty and the Steubenville said Steubenville Police arrested two girls at 4 o'clock today for threatening the young woman who was the subject of the rape in the trial.
Well, again, the victim blaming and the behavior of what that survivor, what that young girl is going through, unfortunately continues to unfold. And I think, as Gail said earlier, it's not just boys that are impacted by rape culture, but girls as well, girls and women as well. And I think that becomes a very sad example, again, of how we as a society have to really rally around survivors and support them coming forward to know that the violence that they're experiencing is not going to be tolerated. And here's a,
this is why it's so difficult and why so many victims do not come forward is because of these attitudes, and these attitudes just perpetuate, as I think Neil mentioned, or maybe it was Rashad, I'm sorry, who mentioned the very, very low numbers of rapists who actually ever go to jail, which is, you don't want to debate the numbers, but I hear about 3 out of 100. But, blaming the victim, threatening the victims, and so on, just perpetuates this violence. And we hear it every day from high school girls, from college girls, who are fearful of coming forward because of the response that they're going to get from their peers. We see it in comments that jurors make. And probably the best thing about the Steubenville case is there was no jury. It was decided by a judge. So, yeah, I think that's I think that's really sad to hear that this girl's being threatened. But again, unusual.
It's interesting. I just want to put out there that another piece of news that was kind of shocking to me, that CNN, Fox, and MSNBC aired the name of the young woman.
Yes.
They didn't bleep out her name when the young boys who were convicted apologized to her. Those three networks actually let the name go out.
Well, as a caller said a few calls back talking about fatherhood, you know, I come to my role here at Men Can Stop Rape as executive director after close to 30 years as a youth advocate and working to support young people, both young men and young women. So I've been doing this work longer with young people longer than I have been executive director here, but I'm a father now of three small children, and I would say to all the fathers of both daughters and sons, only a parent can understand the pain that you feel for a child who's experiencing this kind of trauma. And so for the men and responsible fatherhood work, and I think the work that David Miller does and Joe Jones does in Baltimore City, these are men who are trying to role model the types of examples of manhood in the community. Joe Ehrman is another example of his great work at Coach for America. We have to have more men like this in the communities that they work with coming forward and being involved in our children's lives. It cannot just be up to the women any longer. It cannot just be up to the mothers any longer. We have to do something daily.
Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Mackenzie, you're on the air.
Yes, I just wanted to comment and say we're never going to see any difference in the increase in violence and sexual assault until we change with the media, the TV, the rap culture. All of that needs to change. And I say that because we're bombarded by violence on TV, whether it's through the reality shows, you have this the videos on TV with the rap, and you know the women with the chains around their neck. How can a man, you know, I heard one of the people on your panel to ask, you know, where would they get that idea of, you know, assaulting a woman while she's asleep? See the videos. They show that type of stuff on these videos all the time. You have women fighting each other on TV, you know, and the violence is perpetuated. And I myself, I don't even watch TV that often. But when I do watch, and I watch a couple of reality shows, I see myself, you know, thinking, wow, I mean, I wonder if I did something like that while I'm at work or, you know, and I'm the type of person that would never physically assault another adult. But you just get bombarded by so much of this day in and day out, TV, radio, and then you start to desensitize. You start to think this stuff is okay. And I'm an adult. So just imagine impressionable kids watching this stuff, and that's who they market it to. And then they become even more violent and say, you know, this stuff is okay. I mean, we're already kind of pre-triggered, you know, people to, especially men, when you say they have this kind of macho masculine. Right. And so when you see this type of stuff on TV, you get desensitized by it. So I don't agree with the notion that TV, radio, the rap videos don't have anything to do with why our culture is becoming more violent. I think it is a strong reason why it's becoming more violent. And there's not enough people standing up saying, no, I don't want this on my TV. They've totally messed up the movie rating system. Rated R now, where it used to be PG was back in the day, was now the G movies are really PG now. I can't even take my son to see a G movie. They're shooting, you know, all this type of stuff. And this is something really needs to be done. They need to redo the whole rating system. You can't even watch MTV, VH1, BET. None of this stuff is okay to watch anymore because everything is either people half naked or they're killing each other. Women have chains around their necks. And I'm only in my 30s. I'm not like some old woman who's just like a prude.
Right.
But it's out of control.
So, Mackenzie,
what needs to be done?
Mackenzie, I appreciate the call, and I want our panelists to address the kind of righteous outrage Mackenzie feels about what she's seeing. And, I mean, her analysis is very good, I think, and it's also very personal and very real, and that most of us don't really want to address.
Well, I think that, you know, again, it gets complicated, and I just always encourage people both at a macro level and a micro level in terms of big and small. You know, yes, I agree. I can't take my children to the films that I'd like to take them. And men's violence against girls and women existed before there was a movie projector in this country. So that I don't think it's either or. I think it's both and people can find ways in their life to speak out about whether what has helped shaping attitudes for today's generation and beyond, because there are things in, whether it be on the internet or in movies or in our public policies or in our judicial system, there's all sorts of places where we see these kinds of attitudes come up. Why major media outlets are releasing the names of a survivor who's a child. You know, there are all sorts of places where we can speak to technology's negative impact. And I think it's about saying that it's not about technology being bad or media being bad, but how it's being used and created, yeah, or interpreted.
And I think that just another piece of news, we're talking about that and what you were talking about earlier, Gail, and what happens to women's consciousness themselves and the violence that our Mackenzie, our caller, was talking about. You know, I just lost this. There it is. He said that one of the young women who just was arrested threatened to beat the rape victim's ass, is how she put it, and the other threatened to kill the rape victim. Not that they were going to carry this out. Maybe they would, maybe they wouldn't. But the question is, that's what is in our consciousness. And this goes, it seems to me, what you were mentioning a minute ago, Neil, and I think that it's deeper. It is, I mean, video games, films, the overt sexuality of our advertising world and everything else, they add to this. It exacerbates it.
Yeah.
But you talked, the very beginning, we talked about patriarchy. Patriarchy is, the way we describe it here, is Western civilization. It's as old as the foundation of the Judeo-Christian Islamic ethic. It's in cultures that are not Judeo-Christian Islamic. I mean, it is, and so it's something that you are, that women coming into their own in the world, staking their place as leaders, as equals, is a relatively new phenomenon.
Correct.
And it takes the psyche, the social consciousness, to catch up. The question is, well, what do we do about that? Because it's deeper than just the games. It's something that goes to the heart of who we are as human beings, what kind of society we've created over the last thousands of years, and how to turn that around. To me, that's how deep it is.
And I think that's where the great opportunity becomes, Mark, because you're exactly right with how deep it is and how, why I say it's a daily confrontation that we're in, why primary prevention for us is so important, and why our work through our youth development work and our Men of Strength clubs is so important, because what we're trying to help boys and our community see regularly is that the violence that gets normalized in children's lives is taught. Children aren't born sexist. Children aren't born racist. Children aren't born violent. And so are criminally inclined. So when you start looking at all the environmental factors that contribute to whether it be poverty or air quality or economy or neglect or abuse or trauma that people are experiencing, all these things help build and create a comfort with the violence, with oppressing other people, with using your strength to oppress other people. And historically, as you said, those who are weaker in terms of land or power or money were women and children. And so it made it easier for patriarchy to take hold and be, you know, the during the colonies, the term rule of thumb came from legal requirement that you were allowed to beat your wife as long as the stick wasn't wider than the width of a man's thumb. So that's not about MTV or rap videos. That's about, there is, as you said, as old as this country's existence, understanding that women and older, that women are not equal to men. And so, that's what we're confronting on a daily basis.
Joanne Schmitz wrote in on one of the Facebook pages, "Men and boys have to make it clear to other men and boys that rape is wrong, disgusting, cowardly, heinous, and unacceptable. In this case, we learn that one boy was too drunk to drive, and one of his friends took his keys. Later, the same friend saw the same boy raping the girl and didn't stop him, When it comes to rape, apparently it's still okay to turn a blind eye. The solution to rape isn't women and girls being afraid. It's men who do not condone rape, rape jokes, she had it coming excuses, and slut name-calling. Anything less will not work. Gail Reed?
Yes, and I think that it's not just the boys who watch this. There were girls who watched this and didn't intervene also. But I think, Mark, that, you know, it's a complex situation, and so simple solutions aren't really enough. But I think it's all of these things. I certainly think it's educating our young people. They need lots more education. They're very, very confused. They don't understand what even sexual assault is or consent is, many of them. And I think having men involved in stopping rape is very, very critical. And I also think you have to, what you see in Steubenville is after, thanks to a blogger and all those actions, you ultimately had a justice system, and they're still responding. It sounds like they're going to be convening a grand jury to require testimony from people who refuse to speak to the police. It sounds like they're going after girls who are threatening the victim now. And so I think that it requires a response on every level of our society.
We got somebody, we had a text that said, one year in juvie, the Steubenville boys will be out long before the victim gets out of rape counseling and gets closure, disgusted. And then if I had a quarter for every time a man has yelled something obscene when I simply walked down the street, well, that just came in. So.
Well, I mean, so, and again, you know why Gail's so right, Mark, about it being so complicated. Again, you know, if we're only looking for punitive responses as the only form of justice, then unfortunately, as she said in her second comment, if we were to lock up all the men who were exhibiting, you know, inappropriate or sexist behavior, if we locked up every man for every quarter she said she would have, right, we'd be locking up people on an ongoing basis, and we still wouldn't. That would be a reactionary response. And so we can't lock up everybody. We have to find a way where justice is being served, rehabilitation is a part of the process, and restorative justice is an element as well. It gets very complicated.
So that begs the question about this case, which we don't have time to get into now, but maybe that's our next conversation. What should happen, especially to young men, not men who are 25, 35, 45 years old, but to young men who are 14, 15, 16, who commit an act like this, what should happen to them?
I think it's... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Neil.
No, go ahead.
I think it's just... I think it's a really tough question to say what should happen, but I think a lot of it is getting to why they feel that it was okay to do this. I think it's all about educating before something like this happens, but also educating after this happens, because there has to be some type of disconnect that went on that they felt either it was okay to do this, or the person who stood by and didn't stop it felt it was also okay to do this.
Gail, I'm sorry. I
think that in domestic violence, research has shown if the first time a man physically abuses a woman, if there is a swift response, an arrest, some kind of response, that is a deterrent, and it may well never happen again. What is problematic is when you have no response time after time after time, and the violence escalates until there's a serious injury, and then maybe there's an arrest. And I think it's the same issue with youth offenders. I think when something is reported and no one even goes to interview the alleged suspect, or again, I think sort of a lack of response or a minimal response is a message to the youth, that's fine. Go ahead. Help yourself. And so I think we have to look at a much, I don't necessarily say punitive, but I certainly think a response early and immediate, I think, is giving that person an opportunity to look at the situation a little differently and change their behavior and not escalate and feel entitled to this kind of behavior.
Well said.
Well said, Gail. And I want to thank all of you for being here. That's all we have time for in this particular segment today. By the way, the tweet we got was from Kay Whitehead, who was one of our guests last week, a professor at Loyola. And I want to thank Gail Reed, Director of Advocacy for Turnaround, Inc., Neil Irvin, Executive Director of Men Can't Stop Rape, and Rashad Banks, Health Educator of Planned Parenthood. Thank the three of you for joining. It's been a very important conversation, and we'll come back to it soon.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Mark. Appreciate it.
Thank you all so much. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to look at Gideon versus Rainwhite. This is Gideon's 50th year to talk about. We're going to be doing it this Monday and next Monday as well, the author of the new book on Gideon. So stay with us. We'll be right back.